And as a result, devotees who are aspiring to join the Bhakti Ashram in the future, maybe in next 2, 3, 4 years or so. Mm-hmm. Generally, our students, they complete their studies and they work for about 2 to 3 years, earn some money and give to parents, and then they join. So most of them are in 3rd year. How many are here in 5 years? How many of you have passed out already? They have passed out, they are working. They should join in another couple of places. So,
of those who are like that, they aspire to join, what percentage actually do join? Some renege on their...
90% join.
90%, okay, that's a very good percentage.
That's a small percentage which shifts over to... Mm-hmm.
When they're faced with the actual fact of having to do it, some they think that it's not for me, and they don't follow. There used to be on the sannyas list in ISKCON. It used to be very easy to get on the sannyas list. Nowadays it's very difficult. It's gone to the other extreme. But there used to be quite a high percentage of those on the sannyas list would be 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, and then many of them will get married actually. On the sannyas list means they're waiting to see, they're applying to take sannyas or being recommended for that. And then many of them, when they were seeing that, well, and actually considering, am I ready for that, then they would think, no, I better get married instead. So I was asking about that, how many actually follow through. I'll speak more about that in the lecture.
Actually, we had the topic, qualities necessary to join the Bhakti Ashram. Okay, fine.
Yeah. No, I'll take it right now. Well, that's not guaranteed. I mean, for the last few years, I've been talking about decreasing my traveling for the last many years, and I just seem to be increasing it. But it's actually a fact that if you travel a lot, then you can put... I mean, just like here, you want me to spend more time. Well, naturally, you spend less and less time in each place. So, there's a consideration of quantity and quality, both things. Well, congratulations, Radhe Shyam Prabhu and others who have created a situation in which so many young men are wanting to dedicate their lives fully in the service of Krishna. Brahmachari life in ISKCON means, or is supposed to mean, full dedication to the service of Krishna. If we ask what is the qualification of one desiring to join the Brahmachari ashram, we can say that the basic or the underlying principle is that of seriously desiring to fully dedicate oneself in the service of Krishna, which means in the service of Guru and Krishna. Practically, the brahmachari is particularly the servant of the Guru. Every devotee is Hari Guru Vaishnav Das. But particularly the brahmachari is servant of the Guru, as is stated by Narad Muni. This is stated in, or is recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked by one of his disciples, one thing you have to remember is that Srila Prabhupada was translating the Bhagavatam when he was present with us, so all the volumes of Bhagavatam that we have now, we didn't have them. So our fund of knowledge of the Bhagavatam was increasing with every volume that Srila Prabhupada brought out. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he would often speak on topics that were not yet published, but systematically we didn't know many things because they hadn't been brought out in the Bhagavatam yet. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that Srila Prabhupada, is Brahmachari life mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam? And Prabhupada said yes, and then he quoted this verse of Narad Muni describing the life of a brahmachari, It's the first verse of several verses in which, in other verses, Narad Muni gives certain details, just like what the brahmachari should do in the morning and what kind of dress he should wear and all this kind of thing. But the basic principle is given in the first verse of Narad Muni's description of the brahmachari, which is brahmachari gurukule vasan danto gurur hitan. Then dasavan, acharan dasavan nicho guru sudhrada sohrida. That the brahmachari lives in the gurukul, the place of the guru, and he lives there for the benefit of the guru. So that dedication is there. Acharan dasavan nicho. He should behave as a menial servant and have a very strong bond of affection for the guru. So traditionally, brahmachari life was that was conducted in childhood. Nowadays, brahmachari life usually begins after childhood, what we call brahmachari. It's not traditional brahmachari life, but still it can be called brahmachari life, in as much as brahmacharya means to brahma, means spirit. So brahmacharya means to act on the spiritual platform. So that can be started at any time, and often devotees ask me that, well, can grihasthas read this book, Brahmacharya, or can women read it? And actually, yes, because every devotee is supposed to be a brahmachari in the ultimate sense of the term, because brahmachari means one who acts or literally moves within spirit. But particularly, the brahmachari lives a very humble, dedicated, an austere life. For a brahmachari to be a babu is not fitting. Babu brahmachari. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to use that term sometimes. A brahmachari is not a babu. Or sometimes Srila Prabhupada also sarcastically would say a brahmachari or vyabhichari. Brahmachari is just the opposite of vyabhichari. So it's an austere life, and it is surprising that people in the modern age, young men in the modern age, are taking up brahmachari life. Maybe not so much in India, in the West particularly, because in the West there's no culture anything like this. There's a great advantage to be born in India. Even today, there are still the vestiges of pristine Vedic culture. Do you understand these words? Vestiges, it means like the leftovers or the last traces. And pristine means old and pure. So pristine Vedic culture. There are still some traces of the old and pure Vedic culture. So there, even within in India today, there's some appreciation and respect. It's easier to be a brahmachari in a culture where people, there is some appreciation of that. In the West, there's not much appreciation. Actually, it has increased in recent times, but traditionally there's not much respect for that. People think you're crazy, actually. Many people, they think not only you're crazy, but there's something wrong. If you don't indulge your senses, particularly in sex, people think there's something wrong with you. This comes from the Freudian idea that all the problems in human society are due to lack of full indulgence in sex. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada was discussing the philosophy, or whatever you want to call it, of Freud, Prabhupada said that actually he's right. He's seen that the whole problem is sex. But his approach to it is wrong, because he's saying that, well, he's seen that the whole problem of human existence is sex. But instead of understanding that the problem is sex, therefore we have to regulate it, he sees the problem is sex, therefore we should deregulate it. He was seeing that everyone's fascinated by sex. So Freud's solution was, well, don't be hung up about it. Get into it. Don't have any taboos about it. Just get in there and enjoy yourself. Whereas the real solution is to control the sexual urge. Now, many people think that brahmacharya is just being celibate. Sometimes it's translated as celibate monk. But there is, of course, a lot more to being a brahmachari than being celibate. Traditionally, the brahmacharis, why did they go to Gurukul? Well, not particularly to be celibate, because at the age of 5, there's no real question of whether you're going to be celibate or not. I mean, it's a bit early to be non-celibate. So the real purpose is for study. And then again, there's a brahmacharya. Brahma means spirit. Brahma also means the Vedas. So for brahmacharya life is meant for study of the Vedas. So we study in brahmacharya life, we should make, as Srila Prabhupada used to say, a scrutinizing study of Srila Prabhupada's books. That's a very important feature of a brahmachari. There's very little meaning to being a brahmachari if after being in the brahmachari ashram for 5 years or 10 years and you still haven't read Prabhupada's books. We should study them all, scrutinizingly. Scrutinizingly means Srila Prabhupada's books, which are the Vedic message for the modern age, they should not be studied not in exactly the same manner as you have studied your college textbooks, which are studied for the purpose of acquiring knowledge so that you can use that to your advantage. Now, we also do that with the knowledge in Srila Prabhupada's books. That's also knowledge that we can use to our advantage, but it's a completely different approach. In studying the college textbooks, one is doing so with the attitude that this knowledge is something for me to be, that I can acquire and I can get mastery of. But one can never really be a master of Vedic knowledge, because by acquiring Vedic knowledge, one should come to understand that I am simply a servant. So Srila Prabhupada's books are to be studied in a prayerful mood, primarily for the sake of purification. It's not so much a matter of studying so that I can... Well, yes, we study to preach and to share this knowledge, but primarily for the sake of purification. So that is a necessary function of a brahmachari. Now, one thing we find is that in our ISKCON we are very busy because we have a lot of work to do. There are more than 6 billion jivas in human form on this planet who have no interest in Krishna consciousness. So that's a very serious problem. You know, we're talking about world problems, and there's petrol problem and inflation problem and economic problem and Pakistan problem, and in Pakistan they have an India problem, and there's so many problems. But the real problem is that people are not interested in Krishna. So for that reason, the brahmacharis who dedicate their lives to serve Guru, to serve the Guru, we're all serving Srila Prabhupada as our Param Guru. So Srila Prabhupada very much wanted that his books be distributed very widely. So we have many programs within our Krishna Conscious Movement for distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and for distributing the knowledge in those books. So we often remain very busy in those activities. But at the same time, we have to not neglect to study those books. As Srila Prabhupada said, he was encouraging his devotees so much for distributing his books, but at one point he said, not only one time, but he said that my books are not only for distributing, but they're also for studying. So, one thing, you please, in your upcoming brahmachari life, make a point to study Srila Prabhupada's books and distribute them, of course. That must be there. Studying Srila Prabhupada's books, distributing them. Now, one thing I was saying was that the atmosphere in India is much more conducive for being a brahmachari than in the West. There is a culture of respect for people who take up an austere life, and there was previously a culture of austerity. Nowadays that's gone. And we find that many people raised in modern India, they find it very difficult to live without even without certain comforts that a generation or two ago people would have been, they wouldn't have thought twice about it. Just like, for instance, it doesn't happen very often in the big cities in India anymore, but it used to be very common that in the big cities the electricity was off a lot of the time or most of the time, and in the villages there was not even any electrical applications, there wasn't even any electricity in the whole village. So people were accustomed to tolerating the heat, for instance, and the cold. They were accustomed to that. But in modern India we find that many of the youth, you know, if the temperature just goes down slightly in the morning, they think, oh, I have to have a hot water bath. Now they can't imagine taking a bath if it's just slightly cold. And they can't imagine, you know, how can you live without electricity and fans, electric fans. It's like a necessity of life. So the culture of austerity is due to all these modern conveniences, that automatically the culture of austerity is less. Now, we're not saying that, well, you have to turn the fans off and everyone should take icy water, freezing baths. We're not saying that. But at the same time, we should understand that one who's very much attached to creature comforts, they're not going to make a very good brahmachari. If we're always trying to find some comfortable situation, well, don't join in ISKCON Pune. Because of practically any of our ashrams, they're all overcrowded, what people would call overcrowded. Although, like I say, previously in India, in what was it, 1915 or something, it was like 90% of the population lived in one room. Families were living in one room, or two families in one room. And that was, at least until recently, I know in Calcutta, when I was there, when I was your age, that in certain areas it was very common that a whole family live in one room, or two families or three families in one room, and many families lived in kind of tent put together with scraps, and then when they put in big pipes on the road for laying this drainage, some families moved in, and that became their home. And many people even today live on the street. If you go around Calcutta at 10 o'clock at night, you'll see there are many people living on the street. Despite Mother Teresa's noble efforts, still many people live on the street. So for many Indians, this is, modern Indians, especially those from the middle class, this is unthinkable. Even I was told, I heard this secondhand, that one devotee He was from a rich family in Andhra Pradesh, and he was from a regional town, and he was studying in Hyderabad. And when he would go home to his home, his mother, he was a boy, you know, 20 years old, his mother would feed him like he was a little child of 6 months. She personally put the food in his mouth. So that's not part of the comforts of modern life, but that's also this overly doting atmosphere of mother's love. Well, that, maybe that's one reason why people respected brahmacharis and sannyasis in India. In the West, if you say that, you know, I left home and I'm living separately, people think, well, that's just normal, you know. I mean, in fact, if many mothers, when the children are 18 years old, they say, what are you doing at home? Get out of here. I supported you I already supported you long enough. Now you get out and earn your own money. Don't burden me anymore. So in India, you can't imagine that, even today. The greatest obstacle in most cases for joining the Brahmachari ashram is the family ties, which are still very strong in India, which is a good thing in many ways. It's better that children be raised by loving mothers than by not very much loving mothers. But it can be an obstacle also, because often the young men have doubts. Is it the right thing to do? My mother is crying. And it's almost guaranteed that we've seen it so many times that when a young man joins the Brahmachari ashram, there's some amazing mystical thing that very often happens, that when the young man joins the Brahmachari ashram, all of a sudden their mother gets some kind of terrible incurable disease and they're about to die, and the only possible cure is if their son comes home. So these kind of tests can be there. And then the brahmachari is wondering, you know, have I done the right thing, or have I... So here there's a program of preparing you and preparing the parents also for the terrible day when their son actually does what he was threatening all along, and he actually does it. And parents are often very distressed that I'll never see my son again, or I may only see him once a year or something like that. Although if he emigrated to Canada or America, they'd also only see him once a year or at the most. And but they wouldn't mind. They'd be quite happy, in fact. So in this kind of instance, we can understand that the parental affection, it's not really based on love, but it's absolutely mundane attachment. If the parents are opposed to their son joining the Brahmachari ashram on the grounds that, well, I won't see him, but then if he says, okay, I got a sponsorship to go to America, they also won't see him, but they'll be very happy. So it's not so much that they want to see you, but they want to see you in material life. So we should understand this for what it is. It is Maya. As Srila Prabhupada noted in a purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, his mother, Sachi Mata, she blessed him that now you go and you be a good sannyasi. Even though my heart will break upon not seeing you, but anyway, you go and be a good sannyasi. So Prabhupada noted that a real mother is one who directs her son to go and search for Krishna. Otherwise, Ma means Maya. Just an illusion. So this should be understood. the narration of Chitraketu and his one and only son, Harsha Shok, is also instructive in this regard, because, maybe you know the story, the one baby, one child was born to Chitraketu Maharaj, and then he died. Actually, he was poisoned. So, by the blessings of Narad Muni and Parvat Muni, the Atma who had left the body of that son came back to life. And Chitraketu Maharaj said, "Oh, my son!" And the baby said, "What? Who? What are you talking about?" He said, "I'm your father," he said. And then the son said, "Which father?" "I've had so many fathers in so many lifetimes." So it's good to remember this also, that in every lifetime we have a very loving mother and father, but ultimately at some point we have to remember or come to the consciousness that our real relationship is with Krishna. Anyway, I'm sure you've been instructed well enough in all these things. We should be detached from our family members, just as they are. They may be materially attached to us. We shouldn't be materially attached to them, but we may maintain some attachment on the spiritual platform. Naturally, one has affection for mother and father, and after all, they have given us this body by which we're able to practice Krishna consciousness. So we should, as far as possible, try to act for their spiritual uplift and development. And often we see that parents who are very much against their children becoming brahmacharis, they may eventually begrudgingly accept it, and after some time actually become very pleased and themselves become devotees. Often we see that parents who, I've seen it many times, that parents who are very much against their children becoming full-time devotees of Krishna, after some time they become very pleased with that, and they themselves become so pleased that they take up Krishna consciousness to the level of themselves becoming initiated devotees. So, family affection, that's one factor. So, one qualification or quality for joining the ashram is the determination to do so. And the understanding that by doing so, I am not cheating or denying my parents or anyone else, but I am performing the greatest service for them, even if they don't understand it. And the best thing I can do for them is to help them in this way by performing the most auspicious activities of Krishna consciousness by which they will get ultimate and eternal benefit. So one should be convinced of this. If one has a wavering mind, then one cannot properly live as a brahmachari. If we're thinking, "Well, maybe I made a mistake." If at all we are thinking, "I made a mistake," then we won't be able to dedicate ourselves. If we're thinking that I shouldn't really be here, or did I do the right thing, then how can we dedicate ourselves fully? We have to be convinced that by doing this, this is the best possible way I could be spending my life. That by living in this ashram and fully dedicating myself in the service of Guru and Krishna, this is the best possible thing I could do. There are many things I could do. I could have become an airline pilot. I could have become a software engineer. I was a software engineer. I could be doing this. I could be doing that. I could maybe be a film star. Everyone has their dreams. But by doing this, this is the best thing I could possibly do. If I was offered anything else, if any offer came in the world to do anything, I'll say, no, I'll remain on this floor in the Brahmachari ashram, or maybe have beds, I'm not sure what you have. But anyway, I'm staying here. Whatever else there is, I'm convinced that this is the best possible thing I could be doing with my life, and I'm not going to opt for anything else or even think of anything else. This is what I should be doing. This is the determination required. I often think like that myself, because there are many tests. You know, sometimes you're in very... it's the very nature of this material world. Of course, sannyasis in ISKCON lead a privileged life. We have people serving us and respecting us and all this kind of thing. But nevertheless, there may be various difficulties. And Maya may test us and think, well, you know, what are you doing this for? You know? But always the answer is that certainly to accept any amount of difficulties in Prabhupada's service is far better than trying to make a situation where there are no difficulties in Maya's service. So we should happily accept that. Don't complain. That's a good motto for brahmacharis. Don't complain. Of course, there may sometimes be a need to point something out. But basically, one shouldn't complain. One should be grateful for what you've got, the opportunity to serve Krishna in the association of devotees. Be ready for austerity. If we're not ready for austerity, then we're not ready to join the Brahmachari ashram. And the austerities are considerably less than in previous ages, but still they are there. One austerity, one major austerity, which the children, they don't, those who join the Brahmachari ashram as children, they don't even notice that, because it comes naturally for them, or they don't know anything else. Is one major austerity is the vow of obedience, or discipline, because we're used to, or at least the illusion is there, that we have independence, that we can do what we like. We don't really have much independence, because when you're working in a job, you have to work. But there is the illusion that in the little time that you get when you're out from the office and you're not sleeping or recovering from all the hard work that you did, well, I have independence. I can go to the disco, I can go to the bar, I can watch TV, I can play computer games, I can pick my nose, I can do whatever I like. So I have independence. There's the illusion of independence. Well, there is a little independence, but which is voluntarily curtailed when one joins the Brahmachari ashram, especially a new Brahmachari. His life is very much dictated what we should do. So that can be difficult if we're not prepared for that, if we're not prepared to accept that, to have a very freewheeling spirit is not very conducive for a brahmacharya, especially in the initial stages. After some time, after some training, it's hoped that one will take some responsibility, and then one will have more freedom, because it's expected that one will use that properly in Krishna's service. Just like as a sannyasi, theoretically, I have more freedom than a new brahmacharya. Freedom in the sense that I can choose to some extent my services. But then it's the nature of various services that once you enter into them, you have to follow them through, and you're not free, because you take on responsibilities and you have to continue them. But of course, that is the burden of love. But the point I'm making here is that new brahmacharis, or newly those who are newly in the brahmachari life, there will be a lot of discipline. So we have to be prepared to accept that. Of course, that is that discipline is meted out, hopefully, with a loving spirit. It's not like being in a prison. Actually, it's an interesting thing that one of my godbrothers, who's an astrologer, was telling me that you can look in someone's chart and you may see that, well, for most of their life, they're living in a cell and their movements are restricted, and it looks like they're going to be in prison all their life. But actually, it might be that they're in an ashram all their life. In many ways, it may appear to be similar, because it's disciplined. It's a very austere kind of life. There's not much sense gratification. Actually, there's in the prison, that's the whole idea, no sense gratification. And in the brahmachari ashram, no sense gratification. So for one who is not understanding why he's entered herein, and for one who's not actually on the spiritual platform, the brahmachari ashram might appear to be like a prison. And you might start to think, well, what am I doing here? I could be earning money. And you might even meet your old friends who say, you know, what are you doing? I'm earning 2 lakhs a month. We were in the same batch. You could be doing the same. Here, come on, I'll give you a job now. I'll arrange for you. So if you're not fixed, then we might start to think, yeah, well, what am I doing? You know, I work hard all day and all I get is some chapatis and aloo sabji. I don't have a charming wife to flutter her eyelids as she serves it to me. So one should be convinced that by accepting this way of life, I am getting not just marginally better, but in dimensionally better. This I'm getting something which is better it's a completely different level of betterness. That whatever there is in the whole of the world which I could possibly conceive of for enjoyment, that is, all of it put together is not as valuable as that chapati and aloo sabji and the rest of the life that goes with it. Better than having the most opulent foods and comfortable living and anything that prestige and position and all this kind of thing. To live a humble, simple life in the association of persons who have realized or who are intent on cultivating the realization that this material world, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put it, is no better than a hole in which people pass stool, and that the real purpose of life is to develop love of Krishna, and who have dedicated their life to that principle. That is why I'm here, and I want to stay here, and I have no intention of going anywhere else, unless Guru and Krishna have some desire for me to go anywhere else, but I'm not going outside of Krishna's service. So this association, this is worth cultivating. This is valuable. Material life is empty. That we should understand. It's a very common thing in the Western world at the present time that the syndrome of emptiness, that successful, you know, people who are like 40 years old, they're successful, they're earning lots of money, they're well placed, and they've got everything that any anything that any materialist might aspire for, of course you could always aspire for more, but basically they're what are called successful people, and then this midlife crisis hits them and think, what the hell am I doing? What's it all about? You know, I'm working hard, I've got everything I wanted, but you know, I'm just inside, I'm empty. I don't know, what's the use? And we're working hard in this company to get more people to buy more rubber ducks or whatever the company is producing, or we want to sell more underpants than our rival underpant manufacturers. And what is going, you know, what am I doing here? What's going on? And there's no answer. I recently read an article someone sent me that explained that so many people are suffering from this syndrome, and the person was advising, you know, well, what are you doing it for? You're doing it for money, God damn it! You got to pay your bills. So the author of the article who was examining this and advising that, you know, just be realistic. You've got to pay your bill. But then the writer was a woman, by the way, so I'm saying she. She was saying that, well, you know, what are you working for to pay the bills? But that's this very question that people are asking. You know, what isn't there more to life than just working and paying the bills? And they don't have an answer. We have the answer. They're just living on a very superficial platform. That people, they become, just like this sports, for instance. Why is sport such a big thing in the modern world? I heard these cricket players, they're getting paid like really huge, it's just ridiculous sums of money, isn't it? Like crores of rupees. So they're getting paid crores of rupees means that it's a multi-crore business to stick some cricketers' photo on every single advertisement selling everything you could possibly imagine. And there's, you know, some cricketer's got his face smiling out at you. So it's a multi-crore business. Why is that? Well, it's a diversion. Because people, they don't have satisfaction in their lives, and so they identify with some cricket team and our team won, and they become absorbed in looking at the score and we're winning and we lost, and terrible pain in their heart, or never mind, there's always another chance, and they identify themselves with this sports team. It's nonsense, but it gives artificial meaning to people who don't have anything of, they don't have any meaning in their lives. So brahmachari life is meant for what do you get after giving up all that? What do you get for sleeping on the floor apart from your chapatis and aloo sabji, which is after all prasadam? What do you get? What are you getting out of it? Well, we should get the elevated association of persons who have understood that spiritual life is our actual necessity, and that material life, it's not something to be enthusiastically pursued, but to be, to enthusiastically pursue the consciousness of understanding that material life is, we can say it again and again, no better than a hole into which people pass stool. In other words, it's not something very relishable. Srila Prabhupada said that about a sannyas life, that a sannyasi, when he goes in a rich man's home, he should not think, I could have also had this. If he thinks like that, then he's doomed. He's not a sannyasi. So, accepting brahmachari life, of course, in brahmachari life, there is the proviso that you can also get married at some point if you want to. Brahmachari, entering the brahmachari ashram is not the same as sannyas. There's no vow that one will never get married. But I think that most of you are entering with the idea of not getting married. Is that correct? You want to come, and stay and spend your life serving Krishna and go back to Godhead in this lifetime, right? Without getting diverted along the way. Of course, Grihasthas, they can also be fully Krishna conscious, and there are many who are very Krishna conscious, but it's not the same opportunity as Brahmachari life. In the Brahmachari has nothing else to do 24 hours a day but to serve Guru and Krishna. Whereas in family life, there one has to pursue some occupation, and there may be social considerations and so many medical considerations, especially of the children. And although all these things can be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness, they're not directly Krishna conscious as Brahmachari life is, and usually they are diversions from Krishna consciousness. So the Brahmachari life is the best situation from which to aim at going back home, back to Godhead. And although you may, although the emergency exit is there, if required, it's hoped that there won't be any necessity for that, and one may remain in Krishna consciousness in the Brahmachari ashram, and in this way cultivate Krishna consciousness fully and go back to Godhead. So the main qualities then required for a Brahmachari are the determination, which is based on conviction, knowledge, to pursue this life fully. There's no use being a half-baked Brahmachari, a lazy Brahmachari. Then they're not a Brahmachari, because Brahmacharya means living in the spiritual platform. So it's not a lazy man's alternative. But one should be very active, because Acharan Dasavan Nicho. Das, one of the translations into English of Das is slave. So one should actually be like a slave of the Guru, always at the beck and call. There is the narration in the Mahabharata of, who is that, Udalak, one Brahmachari. His guru didn't teach him anything. He just kept him working for years and years and years. And then eventually bestowed on him Brahma Vidya. Of course, we don't do that in our society. We do have programs for imparting spiritual knowledge, but there is a lot of work also. It's not a lazy man's life. It is a communal life. Like I say, we give up independence, and one thing we may have become accustomed to is some degree of privacy, but in Brahmachari life, that's not there. Generally speaking, there's no privacy. You're living in a room with many other devotees. And here in this ashram, it's a crowded situation. I was speaking about that last time I was here. It's difficult, but there are certain advantages to that also. So one thing that one has to, it's absolutely essential when one is living with many other brahmacharis or many other people in general, is to develop humility, or not to develop, there are no time to develop it, you have to have it, humility and tolerance, because it's difficult living with others, and always there'll be differences. Someone wants the fan on full speed, someone doesn't want it on at all, and someone wants it like this. There's always some difference of opinion, and one has to develop humility, again, not develop. One has to have humility and tolerance, otherwise Brahmachari life will be intolerant. If you don't have humility, then Brahmachari life will be intolerable for the other Brahmacharis if you don't have humility, and if you don't have tolerance, then it'll be intolerable for you. So these are necessary qualities. Trinada Pisuni Chena, Tarora Pisa Hishana, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya Sada Harihi. So there should be lots of kirtan also. Kirtan is the Brahmachari life, is the life of cultivating spiritual knowledge. So Vidya Avadhu Jivanam, the life of spiritual knowledge is kirtan, of glorification of Krishna. So plenty of kirtan. That makes the bliss of kirtan, gives us the energy, gives us the strength to withstand all difficulties which will be there. There will be various tests of maya. So these are some of the qualities that one has to develop. Apart from me speaking about all these qualities in a theoretical way, one can also, just to understand what kind of qualities we have to develop if we are to be actual brahmacharis, we can see the lives of those who are living as brahmacharis and who have done so for many years and who are happy as brahmacharis and productive. They're serving Guru and Krishna in a productive manner. That means that performing valuable service for pushing on the mission, the Sankirtan mission. So we can examine or see the lives of senior brahmacharis, how they're living, and try to emulate their qualities, and in this way live as brahmacharis. So if there are any questions about this, you can ask. You can also write on paper if you don't want to speak. Someone yesterday was telling me that he had a question. He didn't want to tell it in front of everybody, but I was saying that, well, if you're embarrassed to say it, it's probably the kind of thing that everyone's embarrassed to say. So, yeah, any mokic questions? Here's a written question. Here's a common question. And I did actually as you know, I think most of you know, I wrote a book called Brahmacharya in Krishna Consciousness. And there are various reasons I wrote that book. One reason I wrote it, I'm personally inspired by the idea of Brahmacharya, the idea of aspiring for that high level of Krishna consciousness. So that's one reason I wrote the book. Another reason I wrote the book was that after I was admitted into the Krishna Conscious Hospital in the West, and then after about 2 years of practicing something resembling Krishna Conscious in the West for about 2 years, I came to India. Then after a few years in India, I came to the West again just to visit. I didn't have any intention of settling there. But I was shocked when I went and I saw how the standards in the Brahmacharya ashram had gone down in the few years that I had been away. So I actually compiled that book. One major reason was I was thinking mostly of Western devotees. At that time, we didn't have so many Indian devotees in the Brahmacharya ashram, actually. The temples in India were mostly manned by Western devotees in the beginning. So I was mostly thinking of them and to systematically present the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and his followers so that devotees could have some idea of what it's supposed to be all about. Another reason was that by that time I was a senior brahmachari. So aspiring or up-and-coming brahmacharis would often ask me questions about the brahmacharya ashram. So I thought, well, instead of answering these questions all the time, I'll just write a book. And that'll say, you know, it's a bit of an effort to write a book, but it'll save me having to answer all these questions all the time. And devotees these are obviously issues that are on devotees' minds, so let's put it in a book and that will be some help for them. And actually it's a fact that after writing that book, many of the questions, I don't get asked the questions hardly at all, because devotees read that book and I try to cover the various topics and issues facing brahmacharis in that book. So, the question I'm being asked. Well, I have answered it as best as I could in that book, Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness. But again and again, the question comes, because the question is masturbation. It's an unpleasant topic, but it's a common one, because in the modern age, just like I was saying, the brahmacharis, they used to be five-year-old boys, and they were trained from a young age in controlling their mind and senses. And so they were able to be very pure brahmacharis. But in the modern age, it's completely a different situation. And there is, we live in an age of sexual promiscuity. And from a young age, well, the first thing is that young men are not at all trained in any kind of sense control. There's no concept of training in sense control. And just the opposite, from a young age they are subjected to sexual stimuli. And although it's still not as bad in the West, the young men in India, they have mixing with girls, and many young men, unlike previously in India, they have sexual experience before marriage in the present generation. So these sexual stimuli in the form of advertisements, in billboards, on the TV, in magazines, and then young girls or even older women acting in a sexually promiscuous manner and dressing in a sexually agitating manner designed to attract or to awaken the sexual desires in men. All these things put together mean that many, if not most, young men grow up in an atmosphere of sexual agitation which leads to masturbation, the habit of masturbation. So it is a major problem. I have addressed it. I didn't write a long dissertation, but it is there in the Brahmachari book. And of course, writing about it doesn't solve the problem, because it is a difficult problem. Difficult problems or bad habits are difficult to overcome. And it may be that even one has stopped that bad habit, but still there is the shukra dosh, or the because the semen hasn't been trained to go up, then time to time it comes down. Or even in the night time, one may have what is called a wet dream. What to do? Well, I think I've discussed this in the book, that you can't just stop it. You just can't. It's not like a tap that you can turn off. It might be that due to previous bad habits, it may go on. But then, if so, what can you do? As I've mentioned in the book, if your determination to serve Guru and Krishna, that is the essence of your brahmachari life. We should take precaution to not to act in such a way, or that there will be wet dreams. For instance, it's not recommended to eat 2 kilos of halava at night, or 2 kilos of anything for that matter, or even to eat at night at all. It's not recommended for yogis in general. So there are certain things that we can do which will lessen the chances of that happening. But if it does still happen, what should we do? Well, we should chant Hare Krishna. We shouldn't stop chanting Hare Krishna. And just realize that due to my previous bad habits, this is going on. And we pray to Krishna that you please, I'm in this fallen condition, but please help me to serve you as best I can in this situation. It is even mentioned in Shastra that what should a brahmachari do in such an instance? There are certain things he should do if this happens. So even in the Puranic times, it was happening. We can understand from this. Tips for avoiding it. Well, I think that's in the book. What is there? There may be other things also, which are not in the book. Someone was telling me there are some yoga or exercises or way of sitting and this and that. So there may be other. There may be various things that you can do. Oh, one interesting thing that this is in. Someone brought this to my attention in Swami Shivananda. He wrote a book on Brahmacharya. Jayadvaita Swami told me that after reading that book, he understood what I got. I got all my information from that book, but actually, I didn't. I did that. Swami Shivananda's book on Brahmacharya wasn't the basis of my book. In fact, I don't think I took anything from there, although some of the topics may cross over, or what's the word? They may be both in the, I can't remember the word. Intersect, something like that, yeah. But there is one thing someone brought to my attention. He said that he was a doctor previously. He was a previously to taking sannyas. He was a Mayavadi of sorts, but he was what we could call a genuine sadhu. Inasmuch as he was genuinely dedicated to spiritual life, and it's not that Mayavadi is bogus, that's true, but it's not that every sadhu is bogus. I mean, they may be not on the path of Krishna consciousness, but they may be serious practitioners of spiritual life nevertheless. Some people may contest this, but Srila Prabhupada said we should offer obeisances even to Mayavadi sannyasis. So if they're sannyasis, then that's to be respected, even if they're Mayavadis. So anyway, Swami Shivananda, he was what we could call a genuine sadhu. And prior to being a Swami, he was a doctor. So in that book he wrote that it's not necessary, what comes out in a wet dream is not necessarily the shukra or the semen. He said it may be the prostate gland fluid, that's all. Prostate gland is one gland which is, if anyone's a doctor they can tell us, it's situated in or next to the genitalia. So there may not even be that much to worry about. It may be just some the juices from that gland. It may be. That's what he said. If up to what degree one has there's another thing I'm just remembering because I'm feeling. Sorry to be so gross, but I'm feeling that I need to go and pass water. So that's one thing also that it's better, apart from not having a lot of food in the stomach, it's also better not to have a lot of liquid. So drinking milk at night is good for brahmacharis. Cow's milk. Cow's milk means cow's milk. Not that thing that comes out of a packet with cow's milk written on it. There's a difference. So that's good for brahmacharis to drink at night, but it's better to drink it some time before taking rest so that it can, you know, you can pass it out. Otherwise the pressure on that may exert from the bladder, there may be pressure on the genitals. So if and up to what degree one has attraction for the opposite sex, can I know if I'm fit for the brahmachari ashram? Well, Srila Prabhupada in the first canto of the Bhagavatam mentioned that one who accepts sannyas, he should be confident of at least controlling the gross desire. In other words, he's not going to go out and have sex. It's not that everyone who accepts sannyas or enters the brahmachari ashram is free from sex desire. Rather, it may be understood that those who enter this ashram, they do have sex desire, but they are serious to overcome it. If one is completely free from sex desire, there's no need to be a brahmachari or a sannyasi, one's just a paramahamsa. He's beyond all of these things. So some sannyasis are paramahamsas, but maybe not all. But at least there is the determination to overcome sex desire and the confidence that by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, I will not fall down, or I'll act in such a way, that means acting carefully, that I won't fall into gross sex life. So of course there's code of conduct for brahmacharis. They don't mix with women any more than needed. They don't hate women, but they don't mix with them any more than needed. One of my brahmachari disciples the other day was telling me, this is a very instructive incident, that this brahmachari disciple of mine was in a room once with Bhanu Swami Maharaj, one of our ISKCON sannyasis who's based in Chennai, and he was in the room, and there was another man, a middle-aged man in the room, and the door was open, and Bhanu Maharaj and the man, they were joking about something, they were laughing, and that man's daughter, she was outside, she came outside the room, she means a young girl, a young woman. And she saw they're laughing and joking, and she came and she also wanted to, you know, she saw there's some laughter and she wanted to come and join that. He saw this. But as soon as she entered the room, Bhanu Maharaj's whole countenance changed. He stopped laughing. He didn't want to share that kind of joking mood with a young woman. It's very instructive, isn't it? Even though he's, you know, he's old enough to be her father, probably, but he didn't want to share that. So that's a very instructive incident. If you're constantly thinking about women, obviously you're not fit to be brahmacharis, but I don't think you'd be here in this particular meeting this evening if you're in that situation. We should understand, it's Brihad Vrata. It's a great vow. We should understand the seriousness of it, but at the same time, we should be confident that if we're in good association and we're serious, that we can execute this vow. In India, at least, up to date, it's possible. In the West, it's very difficult. This morning I was speaking about another angle on this, that who was present in the class this morning? About half. Yeah, I was talking about that we don't know what the future will bring. There's no saying what the future will bring. So while we are in a favorable situation for cultivating Krishna consciousness, we should cultivate it very strongly, because there's no saying what the future will bring. You might not all your life, but the nature of this mature world is you just don't know what will happen. It might be that all your life you're not in association of devotees, in a protected environment. Living with many brahmacharis is a protected environment. You don't know what will happen. There's no saying. It's just unpredictable. So take advantage of the opportunity while you have it and cultivate the determination internally. The association is there, but at the same time we have to cultivate our own internal determination that will stand with us, even if we are in a situation where we don't have so much support, or maybe no support of others' association. Okay. It's said that a brahmachari should not complain. If there is no vent to them, it may lead to greater mental disturbance, and ultimately the brahmachari may decide to leave the ashram. So, should a brahmachari express his dissatisfaction or not? Well, if there are problems, yes, there should. If there's grounds for complaint, then there should be complaint. Not exactly complaint, but one may suggest that something needs to be rectified. But to be constantly complaining is not conducive for brahmacharya. If one is in a situation where he feels it's so, there are so many things to be complained about that I'm complaining all the time, then probably the whole situation is not, either I'm not fit for the brahmacharya ashram anyway, because I'm just seeing everything is all wrong, or maybe everything is all wrong and this situation isn't very favorable for brahmachari life, and maybe I should join in a situation which is more conducive. Of course, that's a kind of explosive kind of statement that might cause brahmacharis to move from one place to another. But personally, I feel that if someone's going to dedicate their life fully in the service of Krishna, and they're very serious about that, then they deserve the kind of training and reciprocation that they deserve, to get a first-class training and first-class reciprocation. And it's not that brahmachari should just be treated as some kind of as unpaid labor in a temple, and no one cares about them and looks after them, and no one trains them properly. So I would say that if someone is in a temple where they're not getting the kind of guidance that they crave, and there's really no effort to properly guide the brahmacharis, then I would say they're justified in making the move to a situation where they are going to have their aspirations for cultivating spiritual life very seriously, where their aspiration is appreciated. What a disobedient fool should do to become humble. Well, first of all, don't join the brahmachari ashram. You're in the wrong class here. If you're disobedient, then don't join. You're not, and don't, anyway, you shouldn't be allowed to join. I want to dedicate my life, but what about our activities which I've done before Krishna consciousness? Is it an obstacle in brahmachari life? Well, this question is too vague for me to answer. Some activities may be obstacles, just like masturbation we were discussing, obviously. I mean, some things can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Masturbation isn't one of them. But some things, if we've done before, just like there's one devotee who is in Secunderabad who's a photographer, who's working as a photographer. Who's that? Is he here now? Yeah. So you're still doing your photography, I noticed. So there may be scope for utilizing these things in Krishna's service. When I'm with devotees, I have no problems. But when I'm not so Krishna, in not such a Krishna conscious environment like my company, I get agitated. What should be done to remain strong in agitating circumstances? They don't answer these questions. I mean, these must be regularly answered questions, right? What should you do? You should have a strong sadhana program, keep association with devotees as much as possible, and pray for the day when you join the Brahmachari Ashram. Because it is a difference. There is a difference, obviously. When you join the Brahmachari Ashram, you should, having seen the difference, you should be very determined not to go back to that and think that, well, I could have been enjoying, I could have been in the company. When you're in bad company, then we can appreciate, we should be able to appreciate better good company. So, it's not recommended for spiritual life to associate with non-devotees. But you're in that situation. So cultivate Krishna consciousness as strongly as you can. That's all I can say. There are various things you can do. During your lunch break, take a japa break or a reading break. If you're using a computer, then as your wallpaper, you can keep a Krishna conscious picture. For instance, keep a picture of Krishna on your desk. These are various things that can help us. Many times I'm trying to become humble and tolerant, but how many times I'm not successful? What should I do? Keep on trying. And be patient. Of course we're not humble or tolerant. That's why we're in this material world. But we have to try, otherwise we'll remain in the material world. In one sense, we can say it's not wrong not to be humble and tolerant, because that's expected. But what is wrong is not to try to become Krishna conscious. If we're trying, then we're on the right path. Is identifying oneself as a brahmachari or grihastha also a bodily designation? Yes. If yes, all right, it's already yes. Then what should be an ideal motive of a devotee aspiring to become a brahmachari, which will... I can't read the next word. Inspire him to develop the qualities of brahmachari, strict lifestyle and austere, etc. Well, again, this is also covered in my book. Brahmachari is also a designation. So you can also read that book. But it's a useful designation. Understanding that ultimately I'm spirit soul, but right now I'm in this ashram and I should follow the principle. The principles of this ashram are helpful for me to go beyond all designations. Again, it's discussed in that book, and I have only 3 minutes, so I'm not going to belabor the point. You have given a solution for masturbation to tell to our friend. No, I didn't say that, actually. I didn't say, in the book I said that. To confide to a friend that I have this problem, but my mind won't allow me to do so. What to do? Do it anyway. I mean, it's not it's shameful, but it's not shocking. I don't know how many people have come up to me and told me they have this problem. That's why I'm and. So you can understand it's a very common thing in the modern age. Shameful, but not shocking. Nightfall. What to do? Well, Srila Prabhupada recommended to one devotee, eat rice and dal without any spices. Control the diet. That was one suggestion Prabhupada had. Control the diet very strictly. So, if you want, as brahmacharis, you can serve. Those who want can take food without any spices. no sweets. Eat very little. But then the mind may become agitated in another way. Shanai shanai ruparamen dhritya buddhi grihitaya. This is mentioned by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, the yoga process. Gradually, one should make progress with determination and intelligence. This is a good verse for brahmacharis, or a good meditation for brahmacharis. As I said, it's not like turning off a tap. There may be no mechanical means to stop it. All right, it's 8:30, and that's the end of this class, because all good brahmacharis should take rest early, which is something we don't always do because of the demands of preaching. But actually, it is very nice to early to bed, early to rise. That's actually very good for brahmacharya life. Late resting is not very good for health, apart from anything else. I personally find it very nice to rest by approximately 9 o'clock and rise approximately 3 o'clock. Although traveling and preaching in India, it's not always possible because somehow in this country people are addicted to late nights. But it is very nice if we can regulate that way. Hare Krishna, it's a pleasure to speak to all of you who are seriously dedicating your lives in Krishna's service. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.